See, she's on. Carolyn, she knows what's going on here. Welcome, everyone, to the May 9th, 2011 meeting of the Senate Committee on Business, Transportation, and Economic Development. We're going to start out today with House Bill 2150. We'll open a public work session on 2150. Let's see here. We have a couple amendments.
Mr. Chair, I'd be delighted to move one of the most exciting amendments that has been known to this session, the A2 amendments.
Okay. So, we have a motion to adopt the A2 amendments to House Bill 2150. Carolyn, would you like to call the roll?
Senator Burdick?
Yes.
Senator Edwards?
Nope.
Senator Gerard?
Nope.
Senator Starr?
No.
Vice Chair Atkinson?
Yes.
Chair Byer?
No.
Just can't count on you guys like I used to.
The Jones move the A3s?
Well, don't you have to hit the gavel or something? Kill me.
The A2s are not adopted. We will now move the... would you like to move the A3s?
No, I'm mad now.
The chair moves the dash A3 amendments to House Bill 2150, which would add a law enforcement member to the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. Discussion on the motion? Don't see any. Carolyn?
Senator Edwards?
Yeah, sure, what the hell?
No.
Senator Starr?
Nope.
Vice Chair Atkinson?
The suspense is killing me down here.
No, I'm just trying to take a lot of space out of... Yes.
Well, tie. The dash three amendments to Senate Bill, I think, wait a minute, that's right, just three. That's not enough votes. The dash three amendments to House Bill 2150 are not adopted. Okay, so let's just move the bill. Chair moves House Bill 2150 as unamended. Discussion on the motion.
To the floor with the due pass.
To the floor with the due pass, excuse me. Oh, it's a lively group. Carolyn, call the roll, please.
Senator Burdick, excuse. Senator Edwards?
Aye.
Senator Gerard?
Aye.
Senator Starr?
Aye.
Senator Atkinson?
No.
Aye. See, that is four this time. House Bill 2150 is passed the floor with a due pass recommendation. And let's see.
Carrier?
I should ask Senator Gerard to carry this one. Senator!
You can ask.
Would you like to carry this?
Sure.
Senator Gerard will carry. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2633.
Richard. House Bill 2633 clarifies the privileges of a winery licensee, establishes that a winery licensee can import wine or cider in containers that have a capacity of more than 4 liters or of 4 liters or less if the brand of the wine or cider is under the control of the Oregon control of the licensee. There's also a dash four amendment. I have no revenue and no fiscal impact on the original bill, but I have not yet received a fiscal statement on the dash four amendment.
Mr. Jarman.
Thank you, Chair Byer, members of the committee. I'm Dan Jarman, representing the Oregon Wine Growers Association. A little background on the bill that is before you today, which passed the House unanimously a few weeks ago. For a winery to operate in the state of Oregon, you really need sort of two main licenses. One is from the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. The other is a federal license from the Alcohol, Tobacco, Tax, and Trade Bureau. It's this Oregon winery license that we need some clarification on, and hence the reason for the bill. What There's a new business model that exists in the state for wineries, and that's called a custom crush client operation. This is usually a winery that is new to the game, where they want to just buy grapes from a current grape producer in the state, have a winery ferment the wine and bottle the wine, and really the sole purpose of that winery licensee is to sell and market the wine. The need for the clarification in the law is the Oregon winery license right now doesn't distinguish between this type of relationship versus a bricks and mortar winery in the state. And the net effect has been there are some business entities that have emerged that are really taking the privileges that are intended for a full winery licensee and doing things such as setting up a wine shop, which certainly isn't the intent of this legislation. So this is a fairly simple bill that the Oregon Wine Growers Association is bringing to the legislature. We've worked out agreements with the Beer and Wine Wholesalers Association and the OLCC. We're hoping that we get support from this committee, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for Mr. Drummer? Senator Stark?
I have a -A4 amendment. Do you know anything about that?
Mr. Chair Beyer, Senator Starr, Art Schlack with the counties did share with us this amendment. We understand that other proponents of this legislation, including the Beer and Wine Wholesalers and the OLCC, are not in support of this amendment. We would like to see this bill go through the process without amendments. I think that's been the preference of Co-Chair Schaffler, who is the sponsor of this legislation. So in order to expedite this legislation, we would not support the -4 amendments.
Other questions?
Get down. Thank you.
Mr. Schlack, where is Art? Art? You're up.
I thought they were yours. Oh.
Yeah, you can't step out, man.
Just next door, but
it happened. You own the
A4s. Yes, sir. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Art Slack. I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties, and here to speak to the A4 amendments to 2333, which was generated at my request at this point to address an issue that I'd like to bring to the committee's attention. And it has to do with the OLCC and when they issue or consider the issuance of licenses at this point. There is in statute a number of, I'll call it criteria, that they take into consideration when they issue or looking at issuing liquor licenses. There is one criteria that we feel is important that they do not look at it, and they have said on numerous occasions that they do not look at it because it's not in statute and they're not required to look at it. And the issue is the question of local land use regulations. And as you probably are aware, that sometimes local land use regulations, often they provide for food and drink establishments. In some instances, they don't. And there's been a number of occasions when, and I'll just speak for counties at this point, counties have received a request for comment on a proposed liquor license, and the county has responded back to the OLCC that a recommendation of denial because it conflicts with local land use requests, the intent. And the OLCC just continues to process that application and disregards the comments by the local government with respect to their land use ordinances and regulations at this point. We feel that that's an important consideration at this point, at least to be thought about. Unfortunately, what happens often is that OLCC will go ahead and issue the license, even though there may be outstanding land use issues that need to be addressed prior to conducting the business. And so the individual, makes commitments, expends capital at this point to start the business or further that, and then only to find out either after he started it or has taken steps that there are land use implications that might preclude him from undertaking the business in the location that he desires at this point. We think that those ought to be looked at in advance. And so we forwarded, and I know it's late in the session at this point, we forwarded this proposed amendment, which in essence indicates that the OLCC shall at least consider the local land use regulations in connection with any liquor license that they are considering for issuance of a permit. And so I understand that this is late in the session, but this is an issue if the legislature chooses not to address during this session that certainly will come before the legislature in February of next session. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to at least put the issue on the table. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions? Senator Starr?
Thank you. Mr. Schleck, did you get a chance to run these amendments by the sponsor of the bill?
Yes, I did.
And how'd that conversation go?
The sponsor of the bill at this point indicates that there's been a lot of work that's been done and that they are concerned that that anything that would weight the bill down would not be considered a friendly amendment. And that is why, Mr. Chair, as Senator Starr, I indicated that I can appreciate we're in the middle of the session, but I think it's important to identify this issue for the legislature so that you can put it on your, I guess, list for future consideration, and that we would intend to bring back a separate bill for your consideration during the February session of the legislature next year.
Perfect. Thank you.
Anything else? Anybody else who would like to testify on this bill? Thank you, Art.
Thank you.
Bill, please.
Thank you, Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Bill Perry, the Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association. The underlying bill, I don't have a position on. Obviously, I'm opposed to the Dash 4 amendments.
Obviously.
Yeah. And I just to put this in perspective, the service of alcohol is not the land use violation here. And so if you take a restaurant, for example, they had to get a building permit through the county and they had to get a health permit through the county. The liquor license is a latter process that the county had dealt with several different times. So the other thing is if you talk about a wedding reception on land, the wedding reception is the violation, not the liquor license service. So I could have a wedding reception and a caterer and still have the wedding reception, or I could have a wedding reception with no alcohol and still have the wedding reception. So OLCC is already a confusing agency. Land use is a confusing agency. So why are we mixing these two when the service of alcohol is not the land use violation? It's the other activities that go through several other permitting processes. So I just don't think that getting those two combined, confusing things combined would be good.
Just so. Trying to make an interesting cocktail.
Oh, yeah.
Any questions of Bill? Is there anybody else who would like to comment on the bill? Seeing none, we will close the public hearing on this bill and move to open the public hearing on House Bill 2091.
Don't want to move 2630.
Nah, not today. Richard, excuse me.
House Bill 2091 allows the Department of Consumer and Business Services to develop and make available publications for agricultural employers in English, Spanish, and any other language determined to be necessary by the department. There's also a Dash 2 amendment. I have no revenue and no fiscal on the original bill, but I do not yet have fiscal and revenue statements on the Dash 2 amendment.
We should start. Okay. Call Michael Wood. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Beyer, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Michael Wood. I'm the administrator of the Occupational Safety and Health Division of the Oregon Department of Consumer and Business Services, which we generally refer to simply as Oregon OSHA. I'm here today to provide information and request the committee's support for House Bill 2091A. It was introduced at the request of the department.
Let him finish.
To address a provision within the existing statute that was adopted almost 25 years ago. And the provision, it turns out, is excessively restrictive. It requires us to produce educational material for agricultural workers in 10 different languages, English, Spanish, and Russian, Thai, Japanese, Chinese, Laotian, Vietnamese, Korean, and Cambodian. In practice, we do not get requests for the latter 8 of those languages, nor do we, in our enforcement and consultation activity, frequently encounter folks in the field who speak those languages and are not able to converse in English. So what we're asking is essentially that that list be repealed and replaced with an authorization to simply provide the languages, provide the materials in the languages that the director deems appropriate. And this, in essence, what House Bill 2091 would do is eliminate a requirement that requires us to go through the motions of providing these documents when they do not provide any benefit to either employers or workers. With that, you do have my written testimony. I would be open to any questions you might have.
Senator Atkinson.
I don't have any questions with the underlying bill. I think Brad does. I'll come back with it.
Okay. Senator Gerard.
The Dash 2 amendments, do you have a position on that?
We do not have a position on the Dash 2 amendments. We found out about the issue a little earlier this afternoon, and I was handed the amendment shortly after my arrival here in the hearing room. So we have not had a chance to analyze those closely.
Whose amendments are the Dash 2s?
Okay, so we'll bring up the, why don't you hang around? I'll bring up the other two people who want to testify because I think they'll clarify the issue. Roger and Sean?
Here we go.
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Sean Cleave, representing the Oregon Farm Bureau. The Farm Bureau appreciates Mr. Wood's time. And the underlying bill, we have been neutral on the bill as it has progressed. We agree with the assumption that something like this should be held in rule. And I apologize for the late hour of the amendment. This came from Mr. Bernasek, who is the Farm Bureau's attorney, late on Thursday. He represents not only Farm Bureau members, but other agricultural employers in the state. And the underlying issue that is presented in the Dash 2s deals with some legal aid requests for employers to provide languages that have been deemed by legal aid to be insufficient for a particular employee. Without giving details of the case, which I'm not privy to, only the language that was requested to be made was Oaxacan. Oaxacan, according to Wikipedia, is a oral language that has a variety of different dialects and is very difficult to provide in a consistent written mechanism. So this bill would just simply say that the list that the department, or the amendment to this bill would simply say that the list that the department determines would be satisfactory for the employee's compliance under the law and the rule. And with that, I will open to any questions or turn it over to my colleague.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, I'm Roger Beyer. I'm here representing the Oregon Dairy Farmers and the Oregon Grass Seed Growers. Obviously, we employ people of many languages in both those industries, and clarity in this situation would be very beneficial for our members. If the list that's maintained by the department is good enough, we'd like to know what needs to be on that list and what languages we need to provide notification in, and this would help us to do that. So, with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Senator Atkinson now. Still?
I just wanted to ask OROSHA if you could state unequivocally for the record that, in fact, since my wife has become the mother of our son, that she, in fact, does not work for you.
What?
My wife is so safety conscious now that she's pretty much shut down anything good from happening at our house.
Chair Byer, Senator Atkinson, I'm certain your wife is not on our payroll.
I think she's taking night courses. Thank you very much.
Is there any Senator Trott?
Yeah, and this one's for Roger. Russians have been excluded. As you know, we have, in my particular district, we have lots of Russians. Do you think that should be included, or do you think that we should leave it off?
Mr. Chair, Senator Girard, I think the appropriate spot to determine that is by rule.
Good answer.
Anybody else want to dive into this?
Nope.
Well, I'm thinking that official. Do you have, having heard this, do you have any comments at all on the amendment?
Chair Byer, not at this time.
No. Well, maybe we ought to give you a day to take a look at it, because I think we need to get a fiscal on this in order to pass it.
We don't have the fiscal.
We will. Is there any? Thank you very much, gentlemen. Is there anybody else who wishes to comment on this bill? Seeing none, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2091, and we will open a public hearing on House Bill 3490.
House Bill 3490 specifies which county providers workers' compensation coverage to qualified search and rescue volunteers. That sentence is weird. Clarifies that a qualified search and rescue volunteer can be acknowledged at the scene by a sheriff's designee, declares an emergency effective on passage. There's no revenue impact and no fiscal impact.
Yeah. Yes. How can that be?
Well, I don't know. Why don't we let people talk and maybe they'll know.
Okay.
Mr. Snyder and Mr. Roch.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Paul Snyder, representing Association of Oregon Counties, and with me this afternoon is Mark Roush from City County Insurance Services, and we're both appearing today in support of House Bill 3490A. And I think perhaps, Mr. Chair, since CIS has been so deeply involved with this, with your permission, I'd like to just turn it over to Mark Roush to explain it.
Thank you, Paul. Chair Byer, members of the committee, as Paul said, I'm with City County Insurance Services. We cover a number of the counties.
Put your name on the record, please.
Pardon?
Could you put your name on the record?
I'm sorry, it's Mark Roush, R-A-U-C-H. City County Insurance Services covers a number of the counties in the state for workers' comp or a self-insurance pool. We're actually a public entity. But this bill is intended to correct an ambiguity that I think definitely unintentionally ended up in ORS 404215, which was passed in 2009 as part of House Bill 3021. 3021 dealt with a wide range of emergency preparedness issues. This statute and this bill deals with search and rescue, and specifically with who covers search and rescue volunteers. The ambiguity, the intent of the original statute was to clarify that search and rescue volunteers are covered by the county that calls out the search and rescue operation. And the intention there was to just avoid what apparently had been a problem of search and rescue volunteers ending up finding out after the fact that there was no workers' comp coverage in place and they were injured in the course of a search and rescue operation. So the language that would be removed as the amendment to this statute, as it turned out, in practice, what happens. There's no problem. There's no issue where these are search and rescue volunteers for a particular county, and that county is sending out its own volunteers. It works just fine there. Where the problem arises is where there's another county is called in. So County A calls in County B. County B responds with its team of search and rescue volunteers. The way the statute is written, there's an ambiguity as to which county is covering County B's volunteers. I think under the plainest and clearest reading of the statute, County A, who's calling out the volunteers, would be deemed to have elected to cover all of those volunteers. But in practice, we found what actually happens is County B usually has its own team. It trains and they operate as a team. So it already covers those its volunteers for workers' comp. So if it's responding into County A, there's a question as to who is covering them. So this bill would we think clarify that situation by making it clear that in that County A, County B situation, County B's team, their volunteers are covered by County B, and that's mandatory. They're deemed to have elected to cover those employees, whether they're working for County B or responding as a team to County A. Now, the only exception in the second part of the amendment deals with a situation where one of those volunteers, not as part of the County B team, but on his own, responds to a request from the County A sheriff to go out on a search and rescue operation. So he does that. County A sheriff signs him up, and he's basically, he's not then working as a County B volunteer, he's working as a County A volunteer. I know that's a little confusing, but we think this language clears up that ambiguity and hopefully solves the problem. So
how do you get workers' compensation coverage on a non-employee?
That the statute that's referred to in there, and this typically, this is unique to the public sector. The 656.031 is the statute that allows public bodies to elect to cover volunteers. It's intended to encourage volunteerism and avoid the situation where volunteers are injured in the course of what they're doing and they're just out of luck on medical and so forth. So that statute has been around for a long time, and most cities and counties do that.
Okay. Senator Durant.
Yeah, I have a rather specific question. Do you have the bill in front of you?
I do.
Line 27, this is our sub B, it says, are sent by the county. What qualifies that to be are sent by the county? Is that the county commissioner send them or the sheriff sends them? That is, there's a lot of ambiguity there, and I think you might want to clarify that.
It would be typically the sheriff, and county is conclusively deemed to have filed the election for qualified search and rescue volunteers who are sent by the county to perform search and rescue operations under the direction of the sheriff or another county or designee of the sheriff of another county.
Don't you think you need something as deemed by the sheriff? To me, that's a giant loophole in there that can be a problem, and I just soon fix it right the first time.
Sent by the county to perform search and rescue. You're right. It would have to be sent by the county to perform under the direction of the sheriff. So the sheriff is.
Yeah, but is that what happens if the county commissioners go? We never agreed to that.
I think Senator Girard, I think it's intended. I mean, the sheriff is typically in charge of these search and rescue operations, and I think it's within the sheriff's.
Are sent by the county as deemed by the sheriff or something. I mean, so that you. I just think that can be a.
Mr. Chair, Senator Girard, I think that, you know, if it's by the county, it's. Absent anything else, I would think it's the county governing body. But
that's,
by
definition, the county is the county commissioners.
Could delegate that to the sheriff.
Well, but then you need it in here? Because the city, by definition, is the city government. The county, by definition, yes. Is the county government. So if you want the sheriff to be the designee, then you can't have the word county in there.
Where are you looking at, Senator?
Line 27 of the bill. or the Hay and Gross bill. It talks about the options. The first option,
sure.
Yeah, the first option is if they go at the request of the county doing the rescue. The second one is if they go by the request of the county of which they're in. But it says are sent by the county. The first five words there, but there's no definition. Yeah, see, the county would be the, as they said, the governing body. And I don't think that's quite what you want.
County.
It's easy to fix.
Does it suggest which county is responsible under this? If someone gets hurt under the B...
Mr. Chairman, under B, sent by the county, it would be the county that sends the volunteers.
It would be in a county, in your example, county B sends to help county A.
County B is liable for...
Yes, county, if the worker is hurt doing work for county A, county B is liable then for the worker's comp?
I get confused by A's and B's. No. Sure, if Hood River County... sends its volunteers to Clackamas County.
Right.
Yeah. Then Hood River County is responsible for the workers' comp coverage of the volunteers.
Of the people they
sent. Because they're already covered, basically.
Yes.
But when they're sent by the county, my point is the definition of county is the county commissioners.
Under the direction of the sheriff.
And so I don't think that's quite the terminology you want to use. Because most of these are the sheriff has, the sheriff of the county is the one who makes that decision.
I mean, LC could probably, I don't know if it needs to be reworded or not, LC. Oh, and look who's here.
I just think it's
probably give us an opinion on, I mean, the sheriff is a state, a county-wide elected.
Yeah, but he's not the county.
I don't know.
Yeah, by definition, he's not.
Did you hear the senator's question?
I'm not sure if I heard.
Yeah. Come on up. Pose your question.
Okay, if you read the Hay and Gross House Bill 3490, line 27, okay, we're talking about the options. If on the A part, the say it's Clackamas County and they have a climber up there, they request Hood River's search and rescue to come, Clackamas County pays. If Hood River sends them, Hood River pays. Okay, that's the example we got. But B says are sent by the county. The county, by definition, at least every definition I've ever heard, is the county commissioners, it's the governors of the county. So are sent by the county. What we want is sent by the sheriff of that county, because the sheriff is going to make that determination. Is that not correct? Am I saying that?
I would think that's, excuse me, Mr. Chair, Senator Girard, I think that's the way it would work in practical terms, because...
Well, that's the way it should, but that's not, well, okay.
Chair Beyer, Senator Girard, my name is Harrison Conley. I'm a senior deputy legislative counsel, and I was listening to some part of this and thought that I might be able to be of some assistance. Senator Girard, based on what you said, I think the county is a larger term. I mean, if I had meant the governing body of the county specifically, I would have said the governing body, but the county to me is a broader term. Yes, in this case, generally speaking, it is the sheriff who would do the sending. It would be the responsible county official for sending search and rescue people. My perception or my intention in drafting this language is that the B portion is that, say, Polk County has a problem. Polk County calls Marion County Sheriff and says, hey, we need climbers, or we need scuba divers, or whatever specialty volunteer they need. If the request comes to Marion County and Marion County sends its qualified search and rescue people, Marion County is responsible for the workers' comp. But yes, so my perception with are sent by the county is that the sheriff is the officer of the county with the specific authority. It may very well be that the governing body of the county could say, sheriff, no, we're not going to do that in this case. There is some possibility of that.
I think it should be amended. I think it should be amended. Because, I mean, when I said on city council, the city council was the city. And in all lawsuits and all notification, the county is the same way. The county commissioners are technically the county. Unless I'm wrong, but you have somebody from the county as a representative.
Chair Beyer, Senator Drudd, I certainly, as a drafter, I would not object to making this more specific, sheriff of the county sending.
Pleasure of the.
I don't care. I think it's probably fine how it's written because I think the sheriff has that executive authority. But I clarification further. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
An amendment. We don't. Mr. Chair, if I may, Scribner's change.
If Senator Girard would be comfortable with this, maybe the sheriff or the sheriff's designee once again, simply because if the sheriff is unavailable at the time the call comes in,
there you go.
We don't want that to stop the help from coming.
Yeah, I think that's a good, also, I think that would be good, too.
So what do you want, the sheriff or his designee?
Yes.
Do I have an amendment?
Yes, I do.
Okay, do you get it? Can you consider that a request?
Yes, I do, from the committee.
Richard, sorry to take your time. Is there any formation where it would be someone other than the sheriff who would have control over specific volunteers that another county might want? Is there any organizational scheme within Oregon where there's some other official who has volunteers that another county wants? An assessor, for example, in an emergency situation needs their volunteers. I don't think that's a good example, but is there another case where it's not the sheriff?
Well, Mr. Berger, in emergency management situations, my understanding is that there are protocols that are established that can go all the way down the hierarchy, so you don't run into that kind of a problem. It's, for example, in a county, it's the county governing body which gets to declare an emergency. But if you can't find a quorum of the county governing body and the water's coming over the banks of the river, they have protocols in place so that it can go down or over, as the case may be, to someone else, for example, the sheriff, or then the undersheriff, or then somebody else. It's anticipated and written in such a way that you pretty much find somebody who's there at the time that the help is needed or the decision has to be made.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Berger, one other comment. I don't know if this will help clarify your question or not, but keep in mind also this is strictly search and rescue volunteers. If you're thinking in terms of a broader definition or broader notion of volunteers, it wouldn't apply here because this is only search and rescue, which is typically, I think, confined to the sheriff's responsibilities.
Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you, Hurst.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Hurst, you'll get an amendment to committee staff?
Yes.
Thank you. And we can check ahead of time and see if it's going to, if it's clear. Is there anybody else who needed to address this? Not a bit, huh? Just watching to see what it is. All right. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3490. I think that's it. Anything else need to come before us? Seeing none, we're adjourned.